Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it is now or never, and this is going to be our first interview with a candidate running in Idaho. We've had a lot of candidates from different places and different races, and this one is actually our first attorney general. As a matter of fact, just a little background. I met Art Machumber a few years back when I attended a Kootenai County Central Committee meeting, Republican Central Committee meeting, party meeting. And he was there along with a lot of other people. We just briefly met. And it was like a couple of years later, I guess he found out that I had constitutional minutes that I was sending out to the state legislators. And he sent me an email and said, "Hey, G.R., I'd like to get on distribution. Could you CC me when you send those things out?" And so I included him starting last year. And so last year to this year, we had some interesting conversations. And we've, you know, met a couple of times and talked about the Constitution and about very specific issues that I talked to you about. Anyway, I don't have a lot of time. We've got maybe 2 minutes before we get into the interview, and we'll have maybe a minute when this interview is over to close and wrap up. And so with that, without any further ado, what I need to do is actually get right to the points here. And so as I talk to you, and as I've told you for years, and as we've been really focused on a very specific paradigm, when you listen to politicians or people that are running for your vote or asking for you to vote for them or your support, you need to start looking, and we need to always focus to see if this person is looking downstream or upstream. Because upstream, we're finding the roots of the problems, and downstream, we're determining whether this, you know, person is just responding to issues like the homelessness and these types of things. And Art's an upstream kind of guy, but what we want to do is we want to let you come to the conclusions, because I don't like polluting the pool. And what I will say this, Art needs support. He needs our support. And if you look at this race, if you're in Idaho, you need to get behind Art. Art is probably the only constitutional candidate that I know of currently in all the races, statewide and even local, legislative, and so forth. Because he's the only one that's actually been able to speak and talk to. I mean, as far as candidates go, there's a lot of, we call them conservatives or people that, you know, we really like these folks, they're good. Art is the only one that actually can hold his ground in understanding the Constitution, and he has a good grasp of this. So if you want a constitutional leader in Idaho, please listen. Please determine whether he's upstream, downstream. And if you're in Idaho or not in Idaho, please reach out to Art, communicate with him, and support him. He needs all the support he can get, because they need to get rid of that tyrant that is currently in office out there in Idaho as the Attorney General. Anyway, we're going to go into break, and when we come right, we're going to go straight back into the interview, and then as soon as the interview's over, we're going to go right back into closing, because I have basically a minute. So we will be right back with Art as soon as the music is over. Folks, I am back with Art Machumber, and he is running for Attorney General in Idaho. And let me preface this. Out of all of the politicians that are now in a statewide race and even across the state in Idaho, Art is probably the only one that I'm willing to endorse because of his constitutional standing. And because we've actually talked about the Constitution, when I try to get any politician to talk about the Constitution, it becomes an anathema, because they want to talk about, you know, little issues or agendas instead of really talking about what we have to do to get back to our constitutional republic. So, Art, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, GR. I hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing better than most, not as good as some. So, really, real quick, as the Attorney General, and I know you're running for Attorney General, you are running against a rhino. And so, out, and I believe he's running for re-election, out of the polls, where do you stand currently?
Well, that is unknown. I can't tell you. What I can tell you is the current incumbent is And I've started to not call people rhinos because I think it lets them off the hook. I think they're just Democrats and they ought to just fess up to it. This is a guy who's been in office for over 20 years and has not exercised really any of the constitutional powers that are proper to be exercised by an attorney general, specifically various checks and balances in Idaho's case on Governor Little and on other executive branch agencies. And I understand why he has not been doing that. And it's a fundamental misunderstanding of our laws. The second person in the race is a former congressman who is, frankly, been characterized certain ways, a mile wide, an inch deep, an empty suit, a guy who for AG means aspiring governor. And so he really doesn't have the constitutional depth or much depth of any type, frankly, to be running for this job. But the guy with the most money is the former congressman, and the guy with the most, I guess I would say, the most number of skeletons in the closet is the incumbent. And I think that happens just naturally. But there's a couple of things that neither of these folks understand, and that is one of the difficulties of the attorney general position is that you cannot merely represent the government or the governor or the executive branch agencies. You actually have to look at what the job, the core function of government is, the reason for its existence. And once you recognize that protecting the freedoms of the people and their rights to exercise their God-given or natural rights is the core function, then you can only, and only then really can you understand the proper role of the separation of powers and the proper role of our state and federal constitutions compared together. And when I talk about this on the trail, many people are so gratified, frankly, that someone is actually talking about the constitutional anchors that have made America great by allowing their people to be great. I mean, America cannot be separated from the people. So in Idaho, GR, for example, the attorney general advises the governor, gee, Mr. AG, should I close the churches because of COVID? Should I shut down businesses I find to be non-essential? Like all the places where patriots have ever met, like bars and churches and little meeting houses. But we could leave Home Depot open because that's got to be essential during COVID. When it comes to the AG with that kind of decision, the AG has to say, those powers you may or may not have, let's check our Constitution. And immediately you run into Article 1 of the Idaho Constitution, which is actually a broader and deeper list of rights of individuals than the Bill of Rights in the federal Constitution. So we always go to our state constitutions first. And there are reasons for that. But then you say, well, you know, Mr. Governor, you can't close churches in Idaho. There is a free exercise right that cannot be infringed to practice religion. So your only way to exercise any power is the power of the bully pulpit and as an advocate for things that you don't understand. In this case, this alleged COVID emergency that we're undergoing.
Right.
And this is the frustrating part, GR, for someone who understands this level of constitutional proper behavior. It's very frustrating to watch the current incumbent says, well, look, if anybody has a problem with the governor closing their church, they can go get an attorney and they can fight that battle by themselves. Well, okay, that's maybe nice in a one-off case, but when you're closing all the churches in the entire state and you expect all the parishioners to go get their own legal counsel or maybe some kind of a class action suit or something, that's just ignoring half of your job. And so the first thing off is you advise the governor that he doesn't have that power, and then if he continues to take that power and proclaim that it exists, then the AG is the only state official that has the power to check him. And so when he acts outside of his constitutional and statutory authority, you sue him. And you say, I don't know who that guy is, but it can't be the governor of Idaho doing this, because the governor of Idaho has no legal power to do that. So, so then you go to the third branch,
okay,
so, and have the court step in.
So let me ask you this, because I think this kind of has recently come up. So Governor Little clearly violated the Constitution when he shut down businesses, shut down the practice of freedom of religious expression, and so forth. And so I think it just came up that if he was going to extend a state of emergency or reintroduce a state of emergency, because clearly there is nothing within the Constitution that allows a state's state of emergency to suspend the rights of the people. There's no clause that allows states that kind of power. And so,
I haven't seen it.
And so I believe you came right out and said that you would go after him. Do you believe that it is essential that the state, and actually I think the people, should be able to initiate a removal of any public servant regarding Section 3 of the 14th Amendment? What's your position on that?
Well, I think they probably could. The only thing we need is enabling state laws, because otherwise we're left with either referenda or initiatives. Of course, that would be an initiative. Or we're left with an Article 3 accusation of treason, and a case needs to be put forth about what treason was under that particular circumstance. I think there is an argument to be made. And, you know, it's interesting, the whole history of treason's inclusion in the two constitutions, right, state and federal, is almost an admission that you don't want the crowd, the mob, really, to become so infused with what they believe to be treasonous that they will go after this guy. And
right,
there were, you know, we remember the calls for Benedict Arnold's head.
Sure.
And the, you know, this was even, you know, before our Constitution. But in any case, the point being that the treason is very well defined. And you have to say, is it aid and comfort to which enemy? So there's the enemy.
Right.
To ignore the Article I rights or the Bill of Rights in the federal Constitution, the Article I rights in Idaho.
Sure.
Is that treasonous? And I do know this because of Madison's Federalist 37. We know that we have tyranny under our system. What we don't know is if we have treason. And the question becomes, who has the power to take this person out? Obviously, you know, the selected assassinations that we saw by individuals during the 60s would be completely improper. We have to exercise the law that we have. And so in doing so, the question is, who has that cause of action, and what types of arguments have to be made to get those arguments before the court in a way that actually affects change?
All right.
Now, here's the interesting thing, JR.
Okay.
Many times, all you need is a big megaphone and a large publicity, and then suddenly people pick their head up from their desk and they look around and they say, oh my gosh, well, that guy's right. We have to stop the governor from doing this. And the political pressure alone may be sufficient to have a change of path.
Right. Well, so let me inject this, because you're absolutely right. The framers were very, very aware of the mob rule and the tyranny by the majority, that type of thing. And so what they did do was, in the Bill of Rights, after the Constitution, they injected the right of petition. And so clearly that is the civil process, that you formally go and you have the ability to inject by a First Amendment petition demanding the removal of the governor, the removal of a person. I just believe that there needs to be a connection to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and the people to be able to petition. Then it goes into the government's hands, and there needs to be a very, very transparent process that, you know, it doesn't go into the ethics committee. As a matter of fact, I believe that the course of action,
yeah,
I believe the course of action should actually follow common law, and it should actually go into a common law court, a common law grand jury, possibly.
Well, and is not a grand jury indictment a form of petition?
Yeah, well, it is, but I'm just saying if the people can initiate it via a petition, and then if as the charges come forth and everybody examines, clearly, here is a person that's violated their oath, and this falls under Section 3, wouldn't that be a really good, clean process? But the problem is you have to get your legislators to be able to create that law so that that process can exist, right?
Yeah. Well, you don't necessarily have to, but if you don't, you take the risk of an excessive and kind of oppressive, really, federal-state interactive process in the law where the people of the state of Idaho petition under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, to remove Governor Little, and then there's more of a federal evaluation of that case against the state. Now, this may be similar to going to federal court when the state violates one's rights. So it may just move forward on that basis, and that might be fine. But I also think it would be faster if the federal constitution, that amendment was merely cited and quoted
right.
and used in arguments along with a state statutory process. And so, yes, I think the legislatures in Idaho should take a serious look at how do we actually make Section 3 of the federal 14th Amendment come into Idaho law as an enforceable cause of action by the people under petition of some sort of petition. And that's the question of
right.
what you want to do is you want to pick the petition that is more likely than not to lead to either resignation during the process or immediate fulfillment of the process. So what we need to do is look at the various methods of due process in the law and say what's going to do the job quicker.
Right.
Because what you want is, you know, in the old days in England, you would not burn nobility. You would chop off their head. And the reason you did that is because it was quicker and they were deemed to have deserved it by their station in life. So similar today, we're not going to haul out the guillotines, but we are going to look for a process that's swift and sure because not because we want to punish this person quickly and surely as an end goal. What we want to do is rapidly restore the status quo ante, the rights of the people prior to this tyranny and this aggression and this use of the government improperly.
Right. So I guess what I think is kind of important, and I think that maybe the begs this question, what is the relationship between the Attorney General? Because I've always found that there's this disconnect between the judiciary and the legislation or legislative branch. And what I mean by this disconnect is when the judiciary identifies, let's say the Supreme Court really believes that there is this embedded right, and they can actually point to it in the ratification debates, that there's this right regarding, you know, this very specific enumerated power. And so what they do is they make a ruling and it becomes law and everybody knows that's a violation of the separations of powers. I believe there needs to be a connection to where when the judiciary does find something, they say, but however, it is not currently, it doesn't exist and there's no direct correlation or indication of this law under this enumerated power, then shouldn't they basically point to and direct the legislative branch if they deem it important to create the law or embed that into the process or so forth so that, you know, they actually do their job? The legislators are supposed to be the ones that actually legislate instead of the bench?
In Article 5 of the Idaho Constitution, there is a section that is more of a recommendation that says that each year the judges shall report to the judiciary defects in the law, things that they find that are impeding their ability to find justice in particular cases. It's interesting because Idaho, like many judiciary functions, has made errors over time. And one of the errors that Idaho has made is they keep talking about the three branches being co-equal branches. And there's nothing in Idaho's constitution which says they are co-equal at all. In fact, the only thing that that differentiates the branches is the clear process that they undertake. The will of the people makes the law, the executive enforces the law, and then the judiciary makes judgments in particular cases. But the judiciary is not designed to make the law. We have seen them do that recently. They rewrote the speedy trial statutes to suspend the time period during which prosecution could occur. For the time period during which they had unilaterally suspended jury trials in Idaho. That's one of my videos on YouTube. I cover that phenomenon. I don't think there's any power to either suspend jury trials or to rewrite the speedy trial statutes in Title 19 of Idaho Code, specifically at Section 3501, to basically suspend the time period so that the prosecution and the government gets more time. And it's particularly galling to me when the judiciary favors the government in criminal prosecutions. That is something that the U.S. system is not designed to do, because we're all innocent until we're proven guilty. And so because we are innocent, the leaner in horseshoes, the tie goes to the defendant. That's kind of the way it works. And for that not to occur in Idaho is clearly judicial error. I think the judiciary in this case, GR, would need to it's really the attorneys that bring the arguments. There is very rarely a sua sponte or a judicial initiation, if you will, of a legal argument or of a legal position or anything like that. Unless there's a truly egregious situation which is harming the parties and cries to be spoken out about, I don't think, the danger in a case like this is that the judiciary bows out and says, we won't touch this because it's a non-justiciable case. It falls into one of the mootness, ripeness, standing, one of the seven reasons why they kick cases out at the threshold as a what they call a what do they call it? It's not prudential, but it's like that. It's something that says, it wouldn't be prudent to take this case because this is a political question belonging to the other branches, and then we don't get involved.
Right.
So, part of it is I don't think we can depend on the judiciary, which is why we need to have the legislature make the law and then have some enforcement happen that is a mechanism that does not require the judiciary except to recognize it after its fulfillment.
Okay. Well, let me change subjects real quick, because this conversation kind of brings this forward. Is there not a direct responsibility? I see the Attorney General as having a very unique role that can actually function as a leader for the state, more so with the other state attorney generals, because every state in the union is currently dealing with a lot of federal government overreach. And it is my opinion that the state attorney generals could easily be cooperating with each other, or at least working together in how to go after the federal government and these violations, this overreach, this oppression, and so forth. Is that not something that's ever happened before? I mean, I think there have been times in a particular case, but I'm just talking about where the attorney generals actually start going, we've got to deal with all of this overreach. Do you think that the attorney generals across, and I know that some of them are different because some are elected, some are appointed, but it would seem to me that they actually could be like a first responder, or even, a standing counsel or a standing committee in reviewing the federal government's overreach and saying, we've got to go after them for this. Is that not reasonable assessment, that the attorney generals would have that autonomy to be able to do that?
Well, certainly Madison brought up the matter of intercession in 1832 when North Carolina apparently tried to nullify a single federal statute. And Madison argued, I think properly, that if every state had individual powers of nullification, we would have a patchwork quilt of the application of federal law. And what he advocated for was the states getting together and pushing back together. And you are correct that there has been lawsuits. There have been, oh gosh, more than two dozen lawsuits, I think, so far against the Biden administration and various executive orders coordinated by different AGs. Sometimes it's Ken Paxton out of Texas. Sometimes it's Louisiana. And there are other states that have been involved. But I don't know how much of an educational function there is to be undertaken, but there needs to be an effort of coordination of state AGs where they recognize that the federal power is a limited federal power by design, and that it is only the states through the AGs that can actually corral it back into proper operation. Because it's the improper operation, both for federal executive overreach and, frankly, state executive overreach in numerous cases. I mean, if you look at California, it's just a complete nightmare with Gavin Newsom, that are basically breaking the bounds of the republic is what they're doing. They are combining the definition of tyranny in Madison's Federalist 37 is when two or more branches and I think he says all three branches get together and exercise all the powers of government. That's the definition of tyranny. And I think it's more likely to be two branches out of three. Madison always wanted to include the third because we were the first republic to have a formal judiciary. But that aside, when the executive branch makes the law and then enforces the law, and then challenges a given citizen to challenge the law in the executive branch, you're saying now you have to let me be a judiciary and I'll tell you what's right and wrong. And more often than not, in most states, even Idaho, the judiciary will bow to the executive and say, well, you know, we're going to defer to the executive. They obviously know what they're doing. They already do this with executive branch rules as a matter of course. But they've also done this during the pandemic with Brad Little to say, well, you know, we're not going to jump in and get involved. They're very passive and they like being passive. So I think we need to recognize one thing, and this is part of the educational. Tyranny under our system of republics does not mean loading people onto railroad cars or bloody people lying in ditches like Pol Pot or Stalin or Mao.
Right.
That is not the American system. The American system of tyranny is simply when one branch exercises powers of the other branch in a way that's oppressive, or some would say that they even do it at all. But that is a pretty radical view. Justice Scalia would not go along with that view. When he gave us the separation of powers course, that was not involved. We did have a state, Nebraska, tried at one time to have a very bright line between the branches. And all they did was completely immobilize their government. They were unable to work. There are different things that the different branches do that the other branches can undertake in minor forms, and they're the same thing. But when you raise that to the level of what we have in Idaho, which is delegation, where they say, well, the judiciary says, well, the legislature can delegate its power to the executive branch to make rules to flesh out the statutes that it makes. All you're doing is you're gutting your legislature because they can just pass a general law, kick it over to the executive, and they'll make all the rules. Right now in Idaho, we have 722 sets of executive branch rules. There's 1.8 million people in Idaho, by the way, which is less than there are in Queens, New York. So why we have so many rules, I have no idea. But that was the origin of the constitutional amendment I wrote, and got passed in 2018, allowing the legislative branch to review executive branch rules to see if they comport with the statute, and they can review and revise them and that type of thing. So, you know, part of the on-the-ground plan for my candidacy is I'm going to cut some attorneys out of the AG's office. I'm just going to let them go and free up the positions. They won't be there anymore. I'm cutting my own budget. Why? Because these legislators who are making the law actually need their own attorneys in-house. This idea that the since 1997, it's been this condition where the legislature of Idaho needs to go to the executive branch, to the AG's office, to get a legal opinion on the laws that the legislature intends to make. Okay, this is a clear conflict of interest. It is surprising that it could even occur. I've talked to some of the people that put that system in place, and they said, well, gosh, Art, you know, we're a small state. We never had these problems. We never thought there was a conflict of interest. And clearly they were disregarding Madison's concerns about the incentives of government to gain and use power. Because obviously the executive branch wants a particular type of law to be written. The more vague, the better. The more legroom it gives them to do whatever they want, the less due process involved. And so you go back to, and you say, well, here's my opinion, legislature. And then they make that law. They kick it back over the fence. And then they make rules that merely accelerate the bad design of the opinion that they already gave the legislature in the first place. And you just have a complete mess. Well, so this has to stop.
So let me ask you this, because it's interesting. Out of all the lawyers that you know, because I know a lot of lawyers, I know a lot of legislators that are lawyers, and I'm just absolutely dumbfounded as to how little they understand the Constitution. Is it more important that we have give the legislators people that can explain the law, or is it more important that these legislators have somebody that they can go to that actually can point to this is what is constitutional and this is what is not? Because that's what nobody's learning in our education system, is what really is constitutional.
Well, I think it has to be a continual effort from both sides. I mean, GR, I didn't go into law until I was 45. So I have an adult's appreciation and dedication to the law that I don't see from lawyers who have been trained in the system from the first time they walked into a library.
Right.
One process is that, and one reason my law practice went from 0 to 6 attorneys in 3 states in 15 years is because we made it a habit of servicing our clients in a way that the clients fully understood what we were doing and why before we did anything. This is called informed consent, but too often lawyers hide the ball. They say, no, you can't do that. They don't give an explanation. And so ordinary people who are, you know, people just trying to run their lives don't have any ability to understand what the law is doing and why. That is a major problem in our society. And it happens, you know, to Joe the plumber as much as it happens to Jill the legislator. And so one thing out of my office is keeping in touch with the people themselves and the boards, the school boards, the I don't know how much you know about Idaho government, but it's split into 1,000 pieces in order to keep it small. It's part of our original design. And when people come to you for a legal opinion, in my view, you have an obligation as a licensed attorney to explain to them why you're coming to the conclusion you're coming to. And you need to do it in a way that speaks in their language, for their purposes, for their goals, so that they can go back and tell other people, look, the reason why we can't do this is because, look, X, Y, and Z, this is the way it works. And by the way, here's the written legal opinion to go with it. There's a lot of education to be done. But this is part of the importance of getting the right attorneys, not only in the AG's office, but also in the future legislative council's office. So the legislative council has to be a very constitutionally rooted group of people who understand these issues.
So there's obviously, I don't have any doubt that you're a huge, because you read and you've given me feedback on my constitutional minutes. And so I believe you're a true champion of the Constitution. Mike, I guess the one thing that I want to do before we wrap up is, what are the 3 primary problems, if you could break it down to 3 or 2, primary problems, and what are the solutions that the AG, as AG, when you become AG, What are those problems and what is the solution to those problems, the primary problems for the AG in the state of Idaho?
The primary problem we have today is the Biden executive branch overreach into traditional state functions. The OSHA matter, it kind of goes on and on. The forcing the Head Start program participants to wear masks all the way down to two-year-olds. The closing of oil and gas leases on public lands by Joe Biden. You know, when 68% of Idaho is federal title, federal lands. So that's job one, really, is coordinating. And to that end, I'm going to create what I call a strike force of attorneys, a group of attorneys whose primary job is to monitor federal and state cases and look at situations where Idaho needs to step in and make the constitutional arguments about what direction that case should proceed. We might join cases. We might merely be friend of the court briefs, but we will be involved. And it's very, very important because, you know, there are many, even attorney generals, who don't understand the roots of the arguments that they're making. They'll say things like, well, this is a state sovereign issue. And you say, well, why is that? And they start to fumble. They don't understand the police power. They don't understand that state constitutions are limits on state power. They are not grants of power to the states. So that's really job one, is to immediately set up an internal task force and then begin to reach out and coordinate with other AGs. And this is not just for the Biden administration, okay? This is all the administrations going all the way back to at least 1937 with the West Coast Hotel case, where the Supreme Court of the United States simply collapsed into the arms of FDR with the threat of expansion of the court. Every single generation of even the most devout Republicans, except perhaps Goldwater on some level. And you really can't hold Ronald Reagan up as an icon of restraint on federal power in most cases. We need to actually go forward into a new era of freedom in America where the constitutions are actually respected and used and reinvigorated. So that's kind of job one, is push back. The second thing is to get ourselves in shape. We need to, you know, moving attorneys over to the legislative branch may seem like just an administrative function, but it's not. It truly addresses and begins to cure some dangerous imbalances between the executive and legislative branches in Idaho. And part of that task force then, you have these two functions going on. We move the attorneys back to the legislature. We create the task force. And then we begin to re-educate the judiciary itself. Because the judiciary needs to understand that its job is not to defer. There is nothing in the federal or state constitution that says, you know, the judiciary of the state of Idaho will simply just roll over to the executive branch view. Okay, this is dangerous. They are supposed to exercise a check on executive power, and frequently they have. Okay, I can't say they don't understand this, but I think in some cases they need to be reminded of that core function, because that core function is not just, well, you know, we should exercise a check today because what? It's Tuesday. No, it's not like that. We need to exercise a check because there are free people out there who are looking for freedom, and they're looking for the adversarial relationship between the branches to be something that the government itself takes seriously in order to curb its own power and its own extensions of power. So number one, fight back against the federal executive. Number two, realign and strengthen our state sovereignty by actually getting ourselves in shape and then actually exercising the state sovereignty. And when the federal government comes and says, well, you can't do this or I'm not going to give you the money, we need to say, well, then look, take your money and go away, because Idaho's going to do this. This is what we do. We are an independent sovereign. You're not the boss of us. Okay, which is what my my 2-year-old used to say, her favorite line, "You're not the boss of me." States need to say that. And then the third thing is, we need to recognize, GR, in every instance, that the values of the people of Idaho are in a particular and well-worn order of God, family, country, into which I always insert God, family, state, country. But it goes beyond that. It goes to a point where, you know, they closed the federal forests in 76. They froze titles, no more disposal. Over the next 2 decades, they closed the logging industries and all the peripheral ones that supported them, the mining industries and all the peripheral industries that supported them, you know, the truckers, all of them. And so what they've really done is they've undermined our families at the federal level in order to get the boys out of the woods. We don't make men much anymore in Idaho. We have been emasculated in many extents, many, many respects. You know, when Idaho was the richest state in the Union back in 1910, 1920, and we were pulling, you know, billions of ounces of silver out of the hills, and there's a reason why we're called the Gem State, is because our boys got up early with their dads, and they went out and got to work before it was light, and they worked all through the day, and they came home and had a good dinner. And that family bond was as strong as you know, any covalent biological thing that you could put together. And so they've undermined that. Now they've got our boys sitting in front of computers with pierced ears and noses and tattoos all over the place, running around with purple hair, wondering if they're really girls or not. And when they get confused, our state schools and our state governments and our doctors in our state-run healthcare system, thank you very much, are telling our boys that it's okay to be confused to be girls or not. And if they want to go into your daughter's locker room during the soccer game, it's okay with the government. In fact, we'll use Title IX of the federal United States Code to enforce the idea that confused teenage boys can go into girls' locker rooms. Because after all, we have to enforce Title IX, don't we? No, the answer is no, we don't. And we're not going to in Idaho. And we need to stand up against that. And, you know, if it comes right down to it and the judiciary won't help, then there are further resolutions that nobody wants to see, but that have happened in republics before when the government doesn't listen. So we have to make the case so the government does listen. And those values of the people of the state of Idaho are what drive our Idaho culture, our Idaho families, our Idaho churches. And those are really what we're fighting for. We're not fighting for separation of powers. We're not fighting for a constitution. A constitution, a separation of powers, those are all processes and methods we use to support Idaho values. And we got to get that right. We don't have time. And we don't have choices about it, and we need to do it now.
Let me ask you this: is it presumptuous or pretentious for an attorney general candidate to actually reach out while you're in your candidacy and have conversations with sitting attorney generals? It may be pretentious, but in talking to them about coordinating. In other words, if you're leaning forward and go, "I'm going to win this election," and you have that kind of positive aura and you reach out and start creating these bonds, wouldn't that actually be something that would be a part of your campaign?
Well, it is a part of the campaign. And awesome. Part of the problem is actually getting to do it and then breaking through those gatekeepers. As you can imagine, the AGs have a lot of gatekeepers. When I was back at the National Convention of the Federalist Society this last November, I sat next to the current sitting Attorney General of the state of Georgia, who's a guy named Chris, I forget his last name. And it turns out that there's another person running for state Attorney General that would probably be a better candidate in office than he is. And when I call the Attorney General's offices, frequently I get a gatekeeper and a promise, and then they don't get back. So, reaching out is good, but actually getting somewhere as a candidate is much more difficult. And if anyone on your show has any relationship with any attorney general oriented in this way, then please give me their contact information and I will pick up the phone.
Oh, okay. We'll do that offline then, because I've actually spoken to, and I'll just murder his last name. His name's Jason. I've spoken to the attorney general in South Dakota. I've not spoken to Austin over in Montana, but I guess the case in point is, because you know about the lawsuit against Congress for failing to execute the 12th Amendment on January 6th. And so I think that would be a good portal to actually start creating those bonds to say, I think it's in Idaho and your state's best interest that we start openly talking about this, because this being an election year, if we drive this into a public conversation, then it will easily translate into every congressional race as well as every statewide leadership race, such as the attorney general and governor. Because if people aren't talking about the fact that we have an unconstitutionally seated president, then we're going to deal with an unconstitutionally seated president for a full 4-year term.
I would love to see the pleadings in that case.
Yeah.
Because, as a licensed attorney, I think it's improper to speak out on issues of public import until you do your research.
Right.
I just researched 30 years of contracts in Idaho with the Idaho National Laboratories, which is an agreement designed to get basically weapons grade and other nuclear waste out of Idaho by 2035. There are, four core agreements. I analyzed all of them. I put them in my Mackinberg minutes. It's incredibly important to the state of Idaho what's going on outside of Idaho Falls. But people were asking me, well, what about this? What about that? And, I really can't say anything until I've done the research.
Right, I get it. I get it.
You can only apply law to known facts, so you have to figure out the facts. But I'm thinking the facts are in those pleadings.
Yep. Yeah, they are. And I'll get those to you. Are there any parting shots? Is there something that I didn't ask or that you haven't covered that you think that is paramount for my listeners to know?
I think what the listeners need to know is that there is really one guy in this race who understands the relationship between these two documents. And you got a federal and a state constitution. And, reading Joseph Story's commentaries all the way through, reading Blackstone's commentaries on the English law all the way through, reading Lord Cook from the 1600s about the rule of law, and really extending one's legal knowledge back in time is something that any serious candidate for this job, in my view, would have already undertaken before running for office. It's one of those things that you do as an attorney. You do your research. And so when you look at the three candidates, you're really a hiring manager. You're a lot of people have been hiring managers, and you look at the position, you see what it needs, you look at the candidates and you see what they have, and then you pick the best one. And so as a parting shot, I would have to say, take a look at mackinberg4idaho.com. It's foridaho.com. Take a look at the website. I do need donations. I do need, gas has doubled since I started running a year ago.
Yes.
It's really through the roof.
Uh-huh.
And so, my wife, Leslie, is the driver. We've been happily married for 30 years. We have very strong bonds. The two kids are grown. They're both in graduate school. And they're watching their dad on his second major faith journey, the first being tackling law school at age 45. But there are more faith journeys ahead, and I am not reticent to striking out and taking my first step on those, one of which will be the first days in the AG's office. I'm really looking forward to it, actually, JR, quite a bit. GR, we have a private sector attitude about this. You do your research, you get in the office, you administer the darn place, you set some thought leadership in place, and then you harness those 130 attorneys and you make Idaho, I don't want to say make Idaho great again, because I don't know if it's ever been as great as we can make it if I get in there.
Right, right. I get it. So okay.
We're going for it.
Well, and you've got my support. And so what I'll like to do is I'll get your contact information. It'll be on my other links page so that people will be able to go, because they know that's where all my interviews and all the people that we've connected with, we put it up there. So, folks, you'll be able to go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and find his links and information if you can't find MacCumber4Idaho, correct?
.com.
Correct. Right. But, I mean, Googling just MacCumber4, and that's F-O-R. I appreciate you using English instead of the number 4.
And you'll also find the one-minute videos on YouTube. Now, sometimes they go to 4 minutes, but they are every single weekday since January. We've got over 40 of them up there. And these are questions, these are answers to questions a competent lawyer should give when asked on the campaign trail. And it's covered mandatory vaccines. It's covered illegal aliens being brought into Idaho and put up by the state of Idaho. It's covered all kinds of subjects. And it really gives a first look demonstration of what I believe an active attorney general should do, is speak to constituent concerns. It is an elected position in Idaho, so I think we ought to treat it that way.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're really busy doing a campaign and driving across the state, because that's what it takes in any state to be successful in campaigning for a position. And best of luck, and fair seas and following winds, so that way you can have a little bit of a Navy, good luck, Marine Corps background. Thank you so much again. Folks, we will be right back after these quick outtake. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. I'm sorry if you heard the giggling back there. And there's a lot of things I really want to comment on. I have less than a minute. And so what I was alluding to in talking with other AGs, and it's not just AG races, it's all statewide races. We need to encourage candidates like AGs that are running to unseat AGs who are hacks and refuse to enforce the Constitution, or even worse, violated it. We need to get these candidates to create synergy across state lines to appeal to the people so that they understand that they can work together in fighting federal tyranny, and as well as getting the states back in line with the Constitution. We do not need Trump or a Pope or any religious figure to coronate our public servants. We need leaders as candidates to identify the sources of problems and those constitutional solutions available under our Constitution. So there we go. We're out of time. So when we come back, we're actually going to be covering the county and helping you identify how you can be the leader in establishing your, not yours by your name, but your county, and owning your own county's citizen vigilance organization. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.